The OTB Brief. Everything you need to know about sport every morning. Need to get on top of the day's sports news? Well, the OTB Brief is the only sports update you'll need every morning. With all the breaking stories, post-match reaction.
I always look about, you know, teams who've won a league, their mindsets, their body language, their hunger, desire. And I see that so much in this Liverpool team.
And the best bits from off the ball, all in a 10-minute podcast.
Rory McIlroy's game has changed a lot.
The OTB Brief. Weekday mornings from 7:20 a.m. on OTB Sports Radio. Listen on the OTB Sports app. The OTB Podcast Network. With Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural, protein-powered chicken bites.
The GAA Podcast on OTB Sports Radio. Ireland's first and only sports radio station.
Now, you're welcome along. So our next guest has announced his retirement, Kilkenny Hurler. From 2011 to 19, he played in 49 of Kilkenny's 50 championship games, which is quite the record. Four-time All-Ireland winner, four-time All-Star, three national leagues, and he has called it a day. Paul Murphy, you're very welcome. How are you doing?
I'm good, Joe. How are you?
Yeah, very well. Congratulations. That CV must surpass expectations, or does it?
Certainly does. I think from a young age, your ambition is to just get on the Kilkenny team, but once you win maybe in All-Ireland, that's kind of, you know, that's the dream, really. To go any further than that then is, I suppose, it's just uncharted territory. You don't know how far you can go and where it's going to stop. And look, I've been very privileged to win as much as I have, and it's been brilliant. And 49 out of, I didn't realise it was that number, but, you know, it's great to hear numbers like that when you're finishing your career.
Well, I think 49 of 50 puts you and TJ Reid streets ahead of the rest in that period. So you and Reid were the mainstays, really, 49 of 50 championship matches. You're only 32 this month. You've got another 5-6 years in you. So what's the story?
Well, I see now. It's easy to say that now, Joe, and you're sitting in your seat. But sitting in my seat, it's a bit different. Yeah, look, again, there's lots of things that influence the decision. I suppose it's not just physical fitness. There's also, you know, the demands of life in general, and you know, there's lots of commitments to be had. So, you know, it wasn't just a case of am I physically fit? You know, I feel great. And I've been lucky with injuries, I suppose, over the years, one or two niggles, but nothing major to be really concerned about. And nothing major I thankfully won't be bringing back to my club. But look, there's lots of decisions that influence a decision like this. And look, the bottom line, with all the things that affect this decision, I'm very happy in the position I am leaving, that I'm making a good decision.
So what's the biggest factor then?
Yeah, well, look, I suppose the biggest factor is, you see, what's your purpose involved in the team, really? Look, this year, I suppose, didn't go to plan for me. Didn't really have a great club campaign, which I was very disappointed in. And, you know, coming back into Kilkenny, I would have felt it was a great chance to have a clean slate and maybe tackle into getting form back right, which I felt came back right in training sessions, but then just didn't get the game time. So, look, again, that's down to picking teams and managers and selections and different things like that. So, look, I suppose after the year panned out, I kind of said I'd see as the year would go on and make my decision, a very balanced, calculated decision at the end, waited till the year was over and kind of mulled over my decision. I just decided that maybe now, you know, probably not going to get the game time next year, and just decided that, yeah, look, maybe now I can give commitment while I'm still fit and while I'm still can contribute 100% to my club. Why not go back to my club now and contribute massively, really, to my club, and, you know, let someone else, a new young fella, step through and grab a jersey and make a career for himself over the next 10 or 12 years, hopefully.
And how straightforward was that decision? As in, you're a competitor, you're still, like I said, just going on 32 this month, so 32 for the rest of the year. You've had 1 year where you struggled to get into the team. How big was the voice in your head saying, no, we're going to go back next year, we're going to fight, I'm going to get back into that team?
Yeah, look, the competitive side of it, you don't get anywhere in this game, or, you know, I suppose any high level sport, without really having a competitive edge. And really, I suppose once I wasn't getting game time, once I didn't feature in any of the matches, you know, I was probably 95% sure leaving Croke Park against Waterford that was it. And I kind of absorbed the day and took in the surroundings. And, you know, I was very gracious leaving. And then as the few weeks went on, I chatted to people just to make sure I was making the right decision. You know, I would have chatted to Conor Fogarty and Richie Hogan and, you know, a few reliable people over time, just to make sure that, you know, because I wasn't sure, how do you come to this decision and how do you know you're making the right decision? And, you know, there was a time where I was thinking, okay, maybe I will go back. And before Christmas, I was thinking maybe I will go back. Again, after Christmas, then I think the thoughts reoccurred again that, you know, maybe I'm not as excited about going back this year you know, as I was other years. And I think that's a big influence. If you're not going to commit 100%, it's not the right place to be. And I don't think it's fair on your teammates also that if you feel you can't commit 100%, you know, it's probably best to be honest and step aside. So it did go back and forth. And it did take me a good few weeks. But I was happy that I chatted to really reliable people, really sound people with good sound judgment that, you know, once I made my decision, that it was a good decision and that it wasn't just, you know, a flippant decision made off the cuff.
And did COVID feed into it?
Not really, no, to be honest. If anything, it probably would have made it easier to fit back in, because we were turning straight back around into really, as we're looking at a championship now, okay, we'll see if it maybe gets knocked back a month or maybe a few weeks. We just don't know where to go with COVID. But no, COVID didn't affect my decision at all, really, in terms of if I was going to go back.
And what does, say, Richie Hogan say to you, or the other teammates say to you when you're thinking of it? Because I suspect the instinctive reaction of a teammate would be to say, ah, no, you've loads in you. Come on, come back.
Yeah, yeah. And it was the case, you know, the lads did kind of say that to me. And it was nice to hear that. It was nice to hear they weren't hunting you towards the door either.
Paul, I think that's a great idea.
Hey, that's a brilliant idea. That's the best one you've had in 10 years, to be honest. But no, look, the lads were great. And you look, I'm lucky to be surrounded by so many great fellas that are in the game and that understand the game. And they also understand the commitments. And, you know, Richie was great in terms of talking to him. And he made some very good points in terms of going back. And I suppose the big one is, look, he said, once you leave, that is it. So if you are making that decision, you know, be sure of it. But if you're unsure of the decision, you can always go back and decide once you go back. And there was different conversations like that. So it was good to kind of get a different perspective on it and different viewpoints. So certainly he was great for me, but there was no general definite answer once we were finished. It was just a kind of I just want to bounce a few things off you here, Richie. What do you think? And, you know, Richie, thankfully, didn't hunt me towards the door. So we're still friends anyway, that's the main thing.
How did you tell Brian Cody?
How did I tell Brian? Just rang him there. Was it last Thursday morning, I think it was? I just rang him and had decided, yeah, look, I'll give him a call here now. Rang him. It wasn't a long phone call, probably lasted about a minute. But, you know, I was very grateful for the few words we spoke while we were on the phone. You know, again, Brian's the manager and we never had a very personable relationship in that we weren't having cracks and having a joke when we go into a dressing room. It was very much business and I always respected that. But I suppose this minute of an opportunity at the end where I just, you know, obviously said thanks for everything, thanks for the opportunities and so on. And he said thanks to me in return, which, you know, straight away I laughed during the week because I rang or sent a message to David Herity during the week because obviously Herity had said that, you know, Brian didn't say thanks to me when I left. So when I was on the phone, I didn't know what way the phone call would go. And I said, you know, nobody else popped into my head except when Brian said thanks to me, I thought of David Herity. And Herity was absolutely, you know, he was delighted I thought of him, I suppose, in one respect. But it was funny in that you can't weigh off as to how these things would go. But, you know, I was very happy once I hung up the phone. I appreciated the few things that Brian said to me. And, you know, that was really it. There wasn't very much to it.
Yeah, that just seems to be his way. There is a distance with his players. They're his foot soldiers and he's the boss and that's the deal.
Yeah, yeah. It's the way, I suppose, Brian sees it. And different managers operate in different ways. And I think, you know, you only have to look at, I suppose, hurling alone. You can look at Gaelic football as well. Different managers have different styles and, you know, some are very charismatic and some stand back a small bit. And, you know, Brian's way has clearly been successful over the years. And look, I mean, okay, there is a line between you and Brian, but at the same time, you know, he has been great to me over the years and great to me, giving me the opportunities. And I would have felt I was a player that, you know, Brian, I suppose I got on well with Brian over the years and there was never anything there at all that I would have felt, you know, any sort of, you know, that there wasn't anything but a good kind of working relationship there with Brian. So that's the way Brian works. And I've always respected that. And, you know, it was no different once we finished. It was the same relationship.
Well, when you're being picked in 49 of 50 championship matches, it's a pretty straightforward deal.
Yeah, look, I didn't. It's funny that you're saying that. I never thought of it like that. I think the only way you can probably achieve that is not by thinking of it as, I never thought I'd hurl 50 or 49 or whatever it was championship matches for Kilkenny. You're really dealing with it year on year, and you know, injury comes into it. And I think maybe the the injury against Dublin in 2013 was the one I missed. And so, look, different things like that. Other players have been very unlucky with injuries and probably would have surpassed that really in their time. I've been just very fortunate with injuries. Been very fortunate, I suppose, with form. A lot of that is down to myself and working hard. But it's great to be able to walk away saying I was involved that much. And I suppose to be said in the same sentence as TJ Reid doesn't mean I'm as skillful as him, but it's great to see that there is a sentence that you can put Paul Murphy and TJ Reid in the same sentence. So I may hold on to that. Sure, the grandkids that, yeah.
Absolutely. So in 10 years, a lot of ups and downs. Say for Cody, first of all, and I want to ask you about your teammates and some of the years, but say for Cody, is there an example of him standing by you or being good to you or helping you out in your life in some way? And then equally, is there an example of you getting on the wrong side of Cody somewhere along the line?
I suppose being good to me, he was always very understanding of my job in the Defence Forces. So, you know, we all have jobs, I think, that as amateur sports people, as it would be, that, you know, there's crossover and there's days you can't go to training and there's days that, you know, maybe you can get a bit of leverage at work. And thankfully, the Defence Forces and Brian have been great to me over the years. So Brian was very understanding in terms of my job and even the likes of, I went overseas twice within my career. And he was understanding that, look, I'm going to miss a league campaign. But he was understanding the reasons I had to do this, that it was for my professional development and for my career. So he never held that against me, and it was brilliant. You know, stood by me, I suppose, in 2014, we hurled Galway up in Tullamore, and Johnny Lynn, I think it was marking Johnny Lynn towards the end of that match or the second half or so on. Johnny got a few balls and, you know, things didn't really go my way for the last half hour of that game. We got a draw. And we had to go back up and play him the following week. And, you know, Brian just took me aside to leave in the dressing room and said, look, that was one game, half an hour. You can go back out the following week and you're capable of great things. And it was, again, it was probably 15, 20 seconds. But, you know, it was a launch pad really for me to go back the following week. I think I caught the first ball against Johnny Glynn, and which is, again, no mean feat. He's a great player, very strong in the air. And I think the fact that Cody kind of gave me that little bit of a talk afterwards in the dressing room was the launching pad. So he certainly put the arm around me at times. I don't think I ever got on the bad side of him, to be honest. You know, my attitude towards training, I always loved training. I always loved making the sacrifices and loved hard training sessions and not giving up in training. So I think I appealed to Cody in that regard. I don't think, I can't remember an instant where I got on the bad side of him or where he had to pull me in or say anything like that. So there was never anything in that regard.
Yeah.
If there was any bad experience or that, you know, that he had to give me a clip around the ear to maybe... down a peg or two.
Herity is listening at home right now muttering teacher's pet to the radio, I hope you know.
Who's that? David Herity?
Yeah.
Herity, don't worry. Herity is very quick to hear. If someone's talking about David now, if I'm giving out about him, my phone I'm sure is hopping here beside me, but it's good to hear David is listening anyway.
That example of him telling you after the Galway game, listen, in the immediately, look, it's 1.5 hour, you'll go again next week and you'll do fine, is incredibly shrewd. It's incredibly incisive bit of management. It saves you hours of stressing, am I going to even play next weekend, sleepless nights, and gives you, I'd say, to walk out of the stadium that day feeling confident is an achievement on his part. So moments like that maybe give us a glimpse of the talent he so clearly has.
Yeah, I suppose he chooses words carefully, and he chooses, I suppose, his praise carefully also as well, in that, you know, praise is obviously a great thing to give a player, and, you know, some players need a small bit of praise at the right time to build them up, and, you know, some players, maybe when things are going well, hold back and praise a small bit just to keep them grounded in different things. So there's different ways to play it. I think, obviously, because at that time he was, you know, Cody would have a way of standing back from players that, because he even gave me 15 seconds there of saying, look, it's grand. You know, if he was overcoming too much with praise to me over the years, that moment wouldn't have meant as much. But certainly the fact that he took a moment to say, listen, everything's okay, you're grand, I know what you're capable of, on you go. That was enough, because he does choose how he approaches players very, you know, he does think about it, and he does, you know, he doesn't overdo it too much. So when he does do it, obviously, you know, a player does react positively to it. And certainly that is an incident where I did react positively to just, you know, something as small as 15 seconds of a small bit of talking to.
What about teammates then? Who are your go-to guys? Who are your best mates?
I look, over the years, I've been privileged to have great teammates who've taken me under their wing. I think the likes of, in the earlier days, I was surrounded by great backs in the earlier days, which is brilliant. You know, Jackie took me under his wing fairly quickly. The first night I went in training, Brian Hogan, you know, I booked a Brian Hogan for the first night, and I texted Brian later to tell him actually how nervous I was that night, the first night I went in as an old. And here was Brian Hogan, 6'4" or 6'5" at the far side of the pitch, flaking balls at me. I was very nervous, but, you know, Brian took me under his wing, and Tommy and Jay, like, they all did, really. So the whole way along, you know, I never felt that there was any pressure on me, because these were the fellas, you know, the crowds were looking at JJ Delaney or Tommy Welch or Brian Hogan. So they were great to me in that way, and they took the pressure off me, and I could just hurl away. You know, further along, I've been very lucky. I've hurled with the likes of TJ since, and Richie since I'm, you know, 11 or 12 between schools and different things. You know, got great friends with Conor Fogarty and different lads, but there's so many lads I could keep naming. So many phone calls even this week, you know, the likes of Walter Welch and Joey Holden and all these fellas who, you know, you've soldiered with for years. And you couldn't pick out any one person in particular, but certainly at my earlier days, the likes of Jackie would have certainly taken me under his wing. And thankfully, I was always surrounded by fellas who, you know, just great friends. And that's really all it was. You never needed someone to, you know, make a project of yourself. It was just that they were good friends, and that made the whole situation a lot easier and the journey brilliant, because you were just enjoying it with your friends, really.
Any messages land with you this week that meant a lot?
Yeah, again, I suppose it's the, it's very humbling, the messages I've received this week, very unexpected, to be honest. I expected, you know, wanted to say my few thanks and just get my acknowledgements out there, because again, you don't feel you've gotten to this stage without other people. But I suppose when messages come through from, again, the lads you played with over years, that, you know, okay, strange times at the moment, we can't go and meet each other, but wherever they are in the world at the moment, they send you the text, and just to say, you know, we had great times, and I remember this, and I remember that, and do you remember the day in Nolan Park or whatever it was? And you know, I suppose it's quite poignant when you're reading them, because you do realise that it's the end of an era for yourself, that you're moving on, that you'll never go back to this situation and never experience the things you've experienced in the past. So I think really past players and so on. But again, I've received messages from ex-coaches, the likes of Mickey Welsh, who I had under 21 in Kilkenny, and really first person to play me a cornerback, and different people, Martin Fogarty got on to me, Derek Ling, different people. So I think the lads you experienced the big days with, and the bad days with especially as well, the days where you wanted to just hide away from the world, and that they were there with you on those days. Now it's great, and we're all, you know, it's, I'm getting the pat on the back heading away, but it's nice to hear from them people, and, you know, hear, I suppose, memories you had from 10 years ago up to the present day.
Yeah, take a few screenshots. They're lovely messages to have, you know, and we're probably not quick enough to tell each other how much we respect each other at times, or how much journeys together have meant to us. So it's a lovely thing to have. I saw in your statement or that you put out, you know, I got a real sense of perspective from you as well, and that you had your attitude to your sport in a good place. Like, for many, it's an obsession. It's the be-all. It's the end-all. It's number one by a considerable distance, whereas, you know, you've been on three tours with the Defence Forces. In your statement as well, you mentioned your late father, Tommy. I hadn't realised he was your late father. So sport... I suspect you had it in a perspective on good and bad days.
Yeah, look, sport has been brilliant for me, and you know, again, it's kind of more like, I grew up, I said at the start of the statement that it's been my dream for as long as I can remember, and that's, you know, that's not, you know, said flippantly. That is, you know, very true. I grew up in Dainsford. My dad is a former county board chairman, and you know, ever since I can remember, I was going up to Dainsford and I was into the pitch, and, you know, they were the fellas that I held as, you know, superstars, because they were the lads you could see during the week, that you could go up on Tuesday night and watch these fellas. So the Kilkenny team itself seemed like a completely different, you know, galaxy. It did not seem like something that someone from, you know, maybe my club or someone in my position goes. And I remember asking Dad years ago, you know, what do you have to do to get on the Kilkenny team? I was probably 13 or 14, and no, all he said was just, you work hard. You know, he worked with quite a few of these players. He would have known DJ and different players over the years. And he said, the only difference between any of them is you work hard, and that's basically it. So the fact there was never any barriers put in front of me. I was always told you can get on a Kilkenny team if you want to get on a Kilkenny team, if you work hard enough. So it was kind of woven into me a bit more than just the simple thing of, I'm poking a ball around for Kilkenny and there's no sentiment involved. There was always sentiment involved considering my upbringing, and the fact, you know, again, to mention my late father, Tommy obviously passed away when I was 15. So, you know, at that time we were a junior club in Kilkenny. we won the 2006 junior county final. It was the first time, I think, in over 70 years our club wasn't junior. So coming from that stage to maybe me finishing up the other day with now four All-Irelands and four All-Stars, you know, if you told my dad back when I was 14 or 15 that that's where I would end up when I'm 31 going on 32, you know, it's something to be extremely proud of, that you're able to say that, look, okay, he wasn't around to see it, but this is something you did, and you know it's something he certainly will be proud of. So there's lots of aspects involved in it, and it was always something that was, you know, more than just playing hurling for Kilkenny. There was always something a bit more to it.
Right. I didn't realise you were only 15. Did you try and think of him on match days, channel him, connect with him in some way, or was that too much to go near when you've bigger things at hand?
No. Look, it. I think anybody who's been through a life experience like that, of course, it's always in your mind somewhere. But a part of my routine, I just maybe head up to the grave 2 days before the match, just passing by. You know, I'd call out home, visit the family just before, maybe the Friday night or the Saturday before a match, say the match was on a Sunday. And yeah, I'd just stick my head into the graveyard, just go up, quick acknowledgement, and just said a few words and head on. But it was never a thing that engulfed me on match days, you know. I mean, I think you can get too emotional really on match days, and okay, obviously some days are different to others, but certainly, look, you're there to play a match, you're there to play a game, and it's also important to bring a little bit of emotion to it, to bring your pride to it and bring all those different things. But at the end of the day, you also have to stay calm and stay cool. Remember, you're here to play a game. You're here to, you know, function as a player. You're not here to, I suppose, make sure everybody in the crowd rises to their feet and that you play in a completely emotional game. You know, you're there to be very clinical and you're there to do the business as well. So there's always little aspects you draw on. Certainly that was an aspect I did draw on, and, you know, you'd bring it to match day and be proud, but it wasn't an aspect that engulfed me or that I felt, I think it would become too much of a pressure if you bring it on yourself too much that this is the only reason you're here. If you draw from different experiences and, you know, have a few different motivations, you'll never actually be stuck. You'll never have to go to the well to find motivation if, you know, it comes from a few different areas in your life, and don't let certain situations engulf or be the only reason you're playing.
Yes, yes. No, that's probably a wise approach. It would be too much if you went out every day saying, I'm doing it for him. That's a lot to carry. What effect do you think it had on you, his passing, when you were so young?
I suppose it makes you grow up very quickly. You know, it's, I think people who are lucky enough not to experience, you know, a tragedy when they're younger, as that really was for him to pass away at a young age, it makes you grow up a small bit quicker. And I suppose you realise that, you know, when things are good, you know, be grateful for when they're good, and be grateful when people aren't sick, and be grateful for the good things you have. It gave me a huge sense of gratitude growing up. You know, once things got back to normal and everything comes back to normal eventually, I was always grateful. I was always grateful that, you know, I got to hurl minor for Kilkenny. Or let's say when I won an under-21 All-Ireland, you know, I always had a huge sense of gratitude that I've been afforded this opportunity, because you don't know what's around the corner. So it very much, I suppose, made me grow up quite quickly and realise that, you know, you're going to have to, I suppose, be a small bit harder now in life and take on a small bit more responsibility and, you know, a few different things in that regard. I didn't know what it would lead up to down the line in terms of what life choices I would make or might have to make. You know, it's hard to tell someone at that young age how it will affect you in 5 or 10 years' time, but it certainly makes you grow up very quickly. And again, I look back and say, look, you know, it's important also to be grateful now. When things get back to normal, be grateful for what's here now and all the great things you have. And so I'm always very grateful in that regard because of the life experience I've had.
That's an amazing attitude, because gratitude is not the first word I would expect you to say on the back of going through something like that. But you've explained it perfectly, so I totally understand where you're coming from. And was that very sudden, his passing? Was it kind of bolt from the blue in your life?
No, it was really, I suppose, he was sick from when I was quite a young age. I don't actually know what age I was. I was possibly 4 or 5 when I was actually diagnosed with cancer. So then really, once I knew no different really growing up. I was always kind of in and out of hospitals with him and different things. But, you know, it was something that, it wasn't a shock when it happened. He obviously, you know, got bad news gradually along the way. And around early 2004 was when we got the news that, okay, it's gotten worse really. And I was in junior cert year at the time. My sister was in leaving cert. So, you know, there's a lot of things going on, and it's tough certainly on a kid at that time. But it wasn't unexpected. You know, it was obviously, you know, unfortunately people have experiences with cancer, and it's, you know, going on today as we speak, and it's a very unfortunate thing to go through. But it wasn't unexpected at the time, but certainly unfortunate.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's incredibly tough. I guess an extra resonance then if you and your sister and your mum hopefully are in Croke Park for some of those good days. That explains the gratitude.
Yeah, absolutely. My first All Ireland really was 2011, and you know, winning that was, I think afterwards it was actually quite funny. In the highlights after the Sunday game was on, and it panned to someone in the crowd crying, but it was actually my mother. Huh. And she was crying in the crowd because obviously upset and delighted and all different things. But Des Cahill remarked that, I don't know why she's crying for it. She'll pick any year after winning, I don't know how many All-Irelands in the last how many ever years. But I think he got a phone call then from, I think it was Nicky Brennan, rang him just to inform him, look, this is actually the reason that woman that was on the screen was you know, having her little moment. And it was great. Des actually rang my mum afterwards saying, God, I didn't know that was the situation. But yeah, certainly even for my sister, for my mum, again, for them to see this dream kind of come to fruition was huge, you know. And we did enjoy the big days because of that. We did enjoy, you know, savoring those moments and savoring how much, you know, Tommy would have loved to see these moments. So it was, again, we really enjoyed those moments, and we tried to, you know, immerse ourselves in them and take them in as much as we could when we could.
Mm. I guess in that way, he's a big part of your career and all that you did and all the big days. Geez, your poor mum. What are the odds the camera picks her out at that bloody moment?
Yeah, well, I think she was, you know, she'd obviously drifted over towards where the cup was and where Brian Hogan was lifting it. So she was probably within some sort of camera shot. And, you know, I suppose there was a cameraman somewhere looking for the golden shot that he could pan back to the Sunday game that day. So a few things kind of came together. There's no coincidences in life. I'm sure there's a few things. But yeah, look here, a funny moment and a story kind of fell out of it as well that we remember for a good few years as well.
Where do you keep your medals, Paul?
I don't know, Joe. They're somewhere anyway. I don't, not that I'm disrespectful to medals by any means, but certainly when I collected them, you don't collect them on obviously All Ireland final day. There's a, you know, you'll have your night maybe a few nights later in Langton's or wherever it is, or a few months later in Langton's, and you know, you get your medals, you go up on stage, you get your medals, you walk away, you have a look, and you obviously enjoy it. But I was always lucky. My mum would go to these events, and I'd hand her the medals because I'm going back to the bar to get a pint or whatever it is. So the medals would be taken home safely that night, and I'd never asked where they were put. They were always kept safe. But I was saying during the week that we got a bit of a fright. I'm lucky enough now, my sister has a son and daughter at the moment, and there's a jewellery box that looked a small bit too full there one of the days, and my sister opened the jewellery box to find maybe a 2012 All-Ireland medal sitting in the middle of it. So someone's getting enjoyment out of it somewhere, Joe, but I think we're going to have to keep tighter reins on them at the moment, because I don't want to have to go looking for them in 20 years and ask my niece, does she remember where she left it 20 years ago?
Yeah, she put it on eBay. Geez, I can see why Cody liked you, you know, medals away, always fit, always ready to go. This is like perfect approach, what he wants, you know, last year is history. You'll have to dig out those medals. It strikes me, like even just when you're casually listing off various players, be it TJ Reid, or Richie Hogan, or geez, those lads in defence that you played with. It must have been an unbelievable experience at a full Croke Park, or even, you know, Nolan Park at times. That Tipperary match jumps to mind, when ye boys were in full flow and all the collective skill and attitude and power was harnessed and the crowd was on your backs and it was just, you know, really pumping. I can just imagine how amazing that must be. Is there a game or a match or an evening that, you know, you'd relive because of that, you know, to almost re-immerse yourself in that kind of talent that this Kilkenny team really did have? Is there a favourite game in that respect?
Yeah, like you said, I often go back to the game in 2013 against Tipperary in Nolan Park. I think just it was like a perfect storm, really. There was no medals on the line. There was no cups on the line. It was knockout hurling, which, you know, we often hear people these days craving for this knockout hurling. But the fact that ourselves in Tipperary, who have competed up to that stage in so many All-Ireland finals and All-Ireland semi-finals and different things, that here we were now at a very early stage of the year, and it was, and also the fact that you were on home ground, be it Thurles or be it Nolan Park, the fact that, you know, another element of pride comes into it again, that, you know, whoever we're beating us in Croke Park, Jesus, beat us in Nolan Park is unacceptable, you know, and that's the way I'm sure they feel about Thurles. But that evening, you know, there was a lot of things at play that evening. You know, I had injured myself 2 weeks previous against Dublin, and you know, I was on crutches up until maybe the, you know, week before it. Didn't break anything, but again, I suppose a bad sprain. And, you know, Henry hadn't hurled in so long. Henry hadn't hurled in maybe 9 or 10 months, but was involved in training. And, you know, there was lots of things going on. And but that moment, I remember the atmosphere around Kilkenny was that night. It was a summer's evening, no cloud in the sky. And Kilkenny was wedged. I think the match was about 7 o'clock in the evening, but Kilkenny was absolutely packed from, you know, 10 o'clock that morning. People were around the streets, Tipperary, Kilkenny, you know, the pubs were full. There was a kind of a carnival atmosphere in Kilkenny. And I remember we had to get a bus from the New Park to, which is, I mean, maybe it's 800 metres or a kilometre. It's not much more than that. But because the place was so packed, the only logical way to get us to Nolan Park was by bus. And we just couldn't get through the crowds, had to get a Garda escort and all these different things. But when it came to the match, you know, it was 70 minutes of just every ball was absolutely fought for. And, you know, players were straining themselves. Players were getting injured. Yeah, I suppose you had the theatrics as well at the start of, you know, they announced that both myself and Henry were now part of the panel. Myself and Matthew Root were starting and Henry was now on the bench. And I always remember we were stretching in the corner and Henry, I think, was 27 or 28 that day. And they announced, the crowd hushed, and it was a dead silence for 30,000 people in Nolan Park. It was a dead silence. And when they announced number 28, you know, you couldn't even hear Henry Shefflin's name being mentioned because the crowd had erupted. I suppose cheers and boos or whatever, maybe the Tipperary fans, I don't know, but the place exploded and it was just tension from moment one. But, you know, I feel for us that day, that the fact that we got that win, okay, it's maybe not as special, obviously, enough for the Tipperary fellas, but for us that day, it was, you know, very much for a team who was, some players might feel that were coming, drifting towards the end of their careers. It was kind of a, you know, a very much, not a final stand by any means. We went out and won the All-Ireland the following year, but it was just this defiant stand of that, you know, we're here, do what you want to us, but we're not being bet. And, you know, seeing Jackie coming out with balls, exploding out with balls, getting fouled, JJ making a courageous block against Owen Kelly towards the end. And, you know, I remember just, I think it was Seamus Callan and I was on at the end, and the two of us just turned to each other and just, I suppose, a shake of hands and a bit of a hug just to, and we kind of laughed because it was just ridiculous the way the game had gone, that it was never a puck of a ball between, or but a puck of a ball between us. So that game for me was just, it was everything you get into it for. There was no medals on the line. It was just pride. It was, you know, everything you want from a match, really. So that was really the match that did for me.
Oh my God, amazing description. You're making me hate COVID ever more, that description of Kilkenny and the sunshine heaving with people and the excitement and the buzz. Can't come back soon enough. Listen, I've taken up so much of your time. I mean, I intended to talk to you plenty about your career as well with the Defence Forces. You are Lieutenant Paul Murphy as well as Kilkenny hurler Paul Murphy. You were in Lebanon, I know, when COVID kicked off last year on the Israeli border, if it's not quite a border, but where they stand off anyway. So that's clearly been a big part of your life as well and a career you enjoy and I guess is going to be a big focal point for you now for the next however many years.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I joined the Defence Forces in 2008 and I suppose I was someone who left school not really knowing what they wanted to do. I had an idea I wanted to go to either Guards or the Defence Forces. And I suppose I had one or two more people around me at the time that guided me into the Defence Forces. And, you know, really, it's absolutely no regrets. I am, you know, joined as a private, went overseas to Chad very quickly, promoted to corporal. And I suppose in around 2018, really had a great year in that I got commissioned, or 2019 I was commissioned and made lieutenant, which, you know, studied in Maynooth and, you know, a series of different things that just the Defence Force has provided to me that has, you know, I suppose brought to my career as well as a hurler. And, you know, without hurling, I wouldn't, you know, have some of the characteristics to bring to the Defence Forces and likewise the Defence Forces to hurling. But yeah, we kicked off. I was on my third tour of duty in Lebanon, just gone, came back in July. Again, we were overseas for when COVID kicked in. And, you know, we usually have leave rotations where personnel can come home for 3 weeks and, you know, they're staggered throughout the trip. And unfortunately, my leave block was cancelled. And, you know, there was quite a few guys out there who didn't get home for 8 months. And, you know, there was kids involved and it gets quite tough then. But, you know, we had a job to do. I was an operations officer out there. It's a very, you know, as we say, tense but stable environment out there. And, you know, the work the Defence Forces has done in Lebanon, you know, for 60 years now, we have a big connections within the community out there. It's not just a case, like I was saying with the hurling, it's not just a case of you're out there and you're just on the surface doing a job. You know, there's places out there you see Cabinet Falsha signs when you walk into shops in, you know, small towns in Lebanon on the Israel border, which have been, you know, have seen serious wars over the years and different wars. So, you know, the Irish do have a serious footprint in southern Lebanon. At the moment, you know, we have troops out there. We have a battalion out there at the moment. So the work continues out there. Okay, it's quiet, but anybody who knows anything about the Middle East knows that Lebanon is a big focal point for the Middle East. And, you know, peace and stability in Lebanon is vital for the stability in the Middle East. And thankfully, look, Ireland's part of that. Ireland has been a huge part of that. I'm very proud to have served in Lebanon. And, you know, we've lost some great soldiers out there over the years. So to be part of that tradition is as much pride for me as, you know, wearing the Kilkenny jersey.
Yeah, no, it sounds like it. I might talk to you about that in a bit more depth at another stage in the future when you've time. And last point, I saw you getting married in December this year. Is the plan?
Yeah, it's the plan at the moment anyway. I suppose COVID is the only thing up in the air that decide possibly numbers. You know, I suppose we're lucky. We always had December 2021, myself and Aideen, as our date. So, you know, unfortunately, we've seen people push back their weddings into this year, and it's going to be a busy year, you know. So hopefully, look, I mean, as things are clearing up now with vaccines, that people get to have their days. And look, there's bigger things and just more important things than weddings at the moment. But look, we have our date pinned off for the end of the year. I suppose retiring from Kilkenny now, I've been given, you know, an extensive list of jobs, which I'm enjoying the challenge now of taking on. And yeah, look, it's great. It's exciting times. We're thankfully, we won't have any Kilkenny trainings to interfere with any preparations around that time. But look, yeah, exciting times. Hopefully this all clears up and we get a good run at the wedding in December.
Yeah, listen, we sincerely hope so. Paul Murphy, it's been a pleasure. Again, a phenomenal career. 49 of 50 championship games for Kilkenny between 11 and 19. Four-time All-Ireland winner, four-time All-Star, three national leagues. Unbelievably popular in the game and beyond it as well. So we wanted to mark the retirement as well. Say congrats. Wish you all the best for the future, Paul. Thanks a mil.
Thanks very much, Joe. Appreciate it.
The GAA Podcast on OTB Sports Radio, Ireland's first and only sports radio station.
The OTB Podcast Network, with Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural, protein-powered chicken bites.